This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 34, A Lone Sheep. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, a sheep makes a very special appearance on the show, but it's not all about farmyard animals. We also talk about cricket. We help somebody with a bowler who's changed his action, and we help a leg spinner who's having trouble with his googlies. Plus, data. Is it all about it, or is there a time for a hunches as well? Find out on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome again to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket, no matter who you are and no matter where you are. My name is David Hinchliffe, and I look after things here. And helping me to help you are two cricket coaches, first of which is the director of cricket coaching at Mealfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris. Safely ensconced back in school?
Yeah, very much so. Got a bit of inset training going on, which is the same as Mr. Lavery is doing down in PGS. So that's always something that we look forward to. And a bit the same as him. He's got a national finals day coming up, and so have the school. So my last year's under 14s that won two games of cricket the entire year have managed to find themselves in a national finals day at Arundel on Sunday. So they've improved a lot.
Amazing.
It'll be fascinating to see how they go on Sunday. They're an absolute belting group of kids. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how they go. And even if they don't end up winning it, they've still done tremendously to convert two wins in 2014 into a boatload in 2015. So we'll see how we go.
And he's already been mentioned. It's the other person on this verified podcast. It's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David. Good to hear from you.
So you've got all the updates from the child protection.
Yes, I'm now fully up to date. I know exactly what's going on. Well, ask me anything.
You're our specialist on that area. So if anything comes up during the show, we'll know who to turn to.
If anything comes up in the next 3 years, David, apparently.
Superb. There was an article this week, getting back to the cricket, there was an article this week on one of those subjects that comes up quite a lot on this show and all over the internet, which is the difference between using data and working on hunches. And it was talking to an analyst who obviously had his views on analysis, but one of the interesting things that the analyst said as part of this article was that, you know, the data is an important aspect, but it's not, you can't just rely on the information, the numbers. It's you've got to work with the hunches and the ideas that you have from the experiences as a coach. So I thought we might go over that again and see if that's where you're coming from as well, Garris and Lavers, when it comes to gathering data about players and where you draw the line between the hunch and the information.
Yeah, certainly from my perspective, I mean, I was sort of at the start of that whole data explosion, I suppose, and not that I was particularly good at it, because there's a million people that are better at mining data than myself. But really, I suppose that my point of difference over a lot of my competitors in other countries was the fact that often it was a hunch that preceded going to find out some data around about that hunch. So really my aim was to facilitate conversation amongst our players and amongst our coaches about what sort of things do we want to find out about. What do we think is good? What are these conversations that we have around, oh, this is happening or that's happening, that actually are really important to us, so that we can then get people to go away and do some mining of data to see whether they're valid, see whether they stand up or not. And so the way that we went about it was very much, let's grab 10 things that we'd like to find out whether they're true or not, because people keep talking about them in a game of cricket, or we think that it might be happening, and let's go and prove or disprove. And it was a fascinating process to go through, because most of them actually were complete myths. And yet a lot of airspace was being taken up in commentary boxes and in changing rooms around the international cricket game, that and we dispelled quite a few, which then helped us to be able to finalise our game plans and what have you going through. But we were never a slave to data at all. It was very much cricket-based data management, as opposed to data management dictating the way that you end up playing. So yeah, hunches very much preceded the finding out to see whether those hunches had any credibility or not.
It's kind of a fundamental problem of data, is that it tells you what happened before, but it can give you an idea of what's going to happen in the future, but it can't predict the future. If it could, it would be a lot more powerful. But it gives you an insight in what already happened rather than what's going to happen next time.
I think we saw that big time, didn't we, at the World Cup? I think that was the biggest thing that came out of it, the biggest lesson around data was, you know, you can gather your information on how grounds have performed, for example, over the preceding 5 years. But the bottom line is, whenever you concentrate your talent of the world's best in one environment or, you know, across several grounds, then what tends to happen is performances rise. And we see it at Olympics, we see it at World Championships, like the World Championship Athletics that's just occurred. We see it at World Cups, which rugby are just about to go into. Everything that we knew or thought we knew about the game is likely to be challenged in that Rugby World Cup and over the next few weeks because of that concentration of talent that's there. They'll all be watching all at each other day in, day out, and they'll be trying to beat it. And that's exactly what we saw at the World Cup. And England came unstuck with that because a couple of times they went in with historical data. But when you concentrate talent, amazing things happen.
Labours, when you get someone who's really into the data, because you get guys who really enjoy pouring through the stats and looking at all the information and getting as much as they can, players I'm talking about here, is there any pitfalls you've got to watch out for the guys who, they're the ones who are straight up to the laptop, they're looking at all the information, they're looking at, you know, their average speed, they're looking at the line of length at the bowling, they're looking at lots and lots of data information. Does it sort of take something away from being in the moment?
Yeah, sure. You can easily become reliant on it, and you can base your whole game plan and your whole idea of how you want to approach a game or approach a situation on those statistics. But as you rightly said at the beginning there, everything that we produce is based on something in the past, and that means it holds some relevance to what's going to happen in the future, but it doesn't mean it's going to completely dictate what will happen. You might see some people who specifically just would know that if you bowl in a specific area at a certain time of the game, it's gonna help. So we might think that bowling short balls on certain grounds help us, but if we all know that as batsmen as well approaching the game, then in doing that, all our batsmen are ready and set to do it because they know they're going to receive it. So there's having information, and there's having information which we know people also know we have. So you've got to be aware of kind of second guessing the responses to the way you're going to use that information as well. I think in this day and age where so many people have access to so much information, you do have to be very smart and very clever about the application of how you do use it. And simply being in a situation where you see something written down as a statistic, or you generate a statistic yourself and saying this is how it will be, this is how we'll play a game, is not going to get you anywhere on a regular basis, in my opinion. However, having that experience of being able to identify when information you were given is relevant and when it isn't is what it comes down to, and that's part of the skill of coaching or managing or leading or however you want to term it, which is a very, very difficult thing to do. But I guess that's what always requires the element of experience and the element of judgment and decision making, which isn't something we can just generate overnight.
And it really does vary between people, doesn't it, Gareth? I mean, I was showing a guy last night some information that we picked up about his bowling left-arm spinner. And I showed him the data a couple of minutes on Pitch Vision. And he just sort of said, yeah, and did not engage with it in the slightest. And then there's another guy, he's the same kind of age, batsman. You can just show him as much information as you want, and he'll just keep lapping it up until there's nothing left. So it very much depends on the person as well, doesn't it?
Oh, completely. And you know, I look at somebody like an Andrew Flintoff, had no interest whatsoever in anything. You know, anything that I could show him, he would have no interest in it. So I used to package things around numbers. That was, I used to package things in video for him. So I'd have him bowling, and then I'd flash up an image of some statistics or something that we were aiming for him to try and achieve, in the hope that because he was watching himself, I'm not calling him vain, but because he was watching himself, that that information would embed. And, you know, you have to find ways around it. Whereas with somebody like a Paul Collingwood, you know, the more information, the better, the more data, the better for him. So, you know, people are different. And then you had people, this is a great story about data, right? The outset of data coming into the game, and way before I was involved with the England side, but they were playing in a one-day tournament. It was when the speed guns first came into reckoning, and they were being used by the television companies, and they had effectively at the end of somebody's spell they'd have their bowling figures, and then underneath they'd have their top speed, their slowest speed and their average speed. And effectively, through a seven-match one-day series, Darren Goff did not bowl one slower ball because he didn't want to affect his average speed. He wanted to beat Andy Caddick's average speed. That was all that he was in. He was up. So whether he went around the park or not was irrelevant. He just wanted to beat everybody else with their average speed. And obviously, a slower ball wasn't going to help him do that.
We had a version of that the other week in our nets when I was convinced to put up the speed gun on pitch vision, and our fast bowler said, right, I'm going to see how quick I can get it to go. And he managed to hit someone on the... He was trying to bowl so fast, he managed to hit someone on the elbow. So he did get it up to 80 miles an hour, though, so that's not bad.
That's him. Good going.
Rock club bowler, yeah.
That's really good going. But it is, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? And we had a similar thing when pitch vision first went into school, and one of our lads, he's an absolute giant of a kid. I mean, he's 6 foot 5 and a half, and he's, you know, he's developing really well into a good bowler. But at the moment, he's not able to orientate his body and bowl it rapidly. And there's another lad who's slightly shorter, quite a lot shorter than him, who gets it through really well because he's gone through his growth spurt and he can control his body. And this big lad got in a monster strop because he wasn't bowling as quick as this other lad who happened to be a year younger than him. And it took us about 2 weeks to sort of like manage that situation because he'd seen it and he got really, really despondent about it. I don't understand. And that's one of his great questions. He always wants to know why. And we had to explain, you know, it's all about growth spurts and this, that and the other and blah, 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 blah. But the bottom line is that he's probably never going to be as quick as his other lad, but he can still be an amazing bowler in his own right. And that's what we can use things like pitch vision for, to show his groupings and his consistency and all of those things, which are super strengths. And we soon got him back on track, but it did take a couple of weeks to get beyond that first numbers thing, you know, because it was his first experience of numbers.
Right, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got the question, so let's fire away. First question. Balls faced in nets is an unreliable indicator of success in the middle.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Motivation is more important than ability.
Yes.
No.
Third question. Throw away the textbook.
No.
No.
Around about this portion of the show, we turn to listeners' questions. They've been sent in by either readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website or listeners to this very show. And we do our very best to answer those questions. And then we pick a question which wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can email your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. And that is exactly what Brendan's done. Brendan's sent in a question that says, one of the boys that I work with has evolved from a midway bowler using Ian Ponce's 4 tent pegs with high knees through his action to a fully front-on bowler. He still has high knees, and I'm questioning whether lower knees through the crease would better suit him. I understand that front-on bowlers need more energy and speed from their approach to the crease. Do high knees work against this? Thinking about Amir. And he sent in a video as well, which is quite handy for us. So, Lavers, do you want to give us a little run at it first?
I'm just having a look at the video now at the moment. So I think the first thing to do is give a bit of a description of the video for people who are listening, because I'm sure they're interested to see what we're looking at. But first of all, really, really good footage. He's got the camera in a nice safe place behind the stump, so we get a really good view of him running straight towards the camera. And he's also managed to put together a slow-mo version of it as well, which is really useful for us. So anyone who can do that makes our life really easy for us to see what's going on. As you can see, he's quite right in saying that he's become a little bit more front on. So obviously he was a bit more midway or somewhere in that position beforehand, and he's now landing in a fairly front on position. You can see that as he does jump, there is a bit of a high knee lift, and it's probably that front leg as it extends towards the target. It looks like he's worked on overemphasizing that. That's presumably something he's doing to maybe change the way in which his front leg's going to land and try and maybe brace that leg, or might try and get contact on the floor with full foot or heel or whatever he might be trying to do there. One thing that is quite clear from the angle is that he's lined up fairly well, actually. So the direction of his momentum has been pretty good. So an initial look at it is that I wouldn't say he's overdoing any of the high knees at the moment. It's difficult to compare because it's always nice to have a before and afterwards, but I wouldn't say he's doing anything that's going to have a significant impact negatively on him with his knees. However, we're obviously looking at an end result rather than a comparison to a previous one. Just running through it again, looking at these legs. The other thing you'd say in terms of his alignment, he's very, very slightly closed off or crossed over, but only to a small amount. So there's not a massive, that's not having a massive impact on how well his knees can drive through, although his right knee might end up driving through a little bit towards final leg rather than directly at the target. I wouldn't say that the degree to which he is elevating his knees would be an immediate negative impact on how he's bowling, but it would be interesting to see a before video as well if we could do at some stage.
There was one thing that I thought was that maybe with the knee going up so high that it's messing up the timing of his upper body movements as well. Is that something that you saw?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure whether it is messing him up, but it is something to consider when you're working with a bowler. And so I looked at it and thought that I'd be interested with a before and after and getting some different angles to see whether that's the case. The side-on angle often gives us a better indication of the sequencing, which is what you're talking about there, between the lower half of the body and the top half of the body. The front-on view doesn't give us such a good angle on that. So it'd be interesting to see whether that higher left leg or front leg lift that he's got there is causing that. To me, there's a couple of things here. He's obviously somebody, as you've explained in the question, that is working through a process to turn him from a midway into a front on. And I think that's evident in the video because the run up looks as if it's part of a drills package rather than him running into bowl to try and get somebody out. So I would be very keen to see what would happen in him in a competitive situation to see whether he could get some more momentum in his run up going into his delivery stride, because as we know, we do need to carry some pace. If we're front on bowler without being able to rotate the body, where we get a lot of pace from, or a lot of bowlers get a lot of pace from, you need to have that pace going into the crease to be able to take that momentum through into the bowling action, because you don't rotate as much or at all in this case. So I'd like to see more pace in there, and I assume this is part of his drills package rather than being him at full tilt. So if you can send that in, that would be amazing. And secondly, for me, I think the root cause of that left knee or that front knee going quite high as he's in the delivery stride is the fact that if you notice before he gets into back foot contact, that his body weight shifts backward quite a lot. And as his body weight shifts backwards, obviously his knees are going to raise a bit more. So I wonder whether if you could get a more neutral position where the body is upright as opposed to leaning backwards, whether that would have a knock-on effect to the height of the front leg as it goes through. So that would be my, and again, sideways on would be a really good shot to be able to monitor the difference between what he's doing there, which is a slight lean back prior to back foot contact, into a more neutral position where you're carrying yourself upright rather than leaning back. So again, that would be something to have a look at. But ultimately, when we look at bowlers running in, some people are likely to have a more pronounced front knee lift, a knee lift in front of themselves, and some people are likely to have more of a pronounced sort of heel flick in their running style. And that's very normal. And it was interesting watching Mo Farah and his competitors in the World Championships recently. And when they run down the back straight and you get that view and they're starting to open up and trying to pull away from their competitors, you see their running styles. And out of the first five that you saw, I paused it as they were running, and a number of them had a more significant flicks of a back in preparation for their leg coming through, and a number of them had very, very high knees. And the bottom line is that people run either with a very pronounced back flick or a very pronounced knee raise. And this lad looks as if he runs with a more pronounced knee raise. And we don't want to change that because that's what he does naturally. And actually a front-on bowler, or somebody that I perceived to be a front-on bowler that was very good, who had fantastic knee lift, just like this lad, was Kirtley Ambrose. And he had a very pronounced left knee, a front knee, as he came in and bowled. Pretty intimidating sight when he was letting the ball go at you. But all the way through his run-up as well, he had very high knees. And that was just the way he did it. Nobody coached him to do that. That was the way that his body unwound. And in the same way, I think this lad's got significant knees, knee lift when he runs. So it's a very natural thing. I think you've done a great job in converting him from midway to front on. It looks like a good, solid action, but I'd like to see it at full tilt because from looking in, it looks as if he's working through a drills approach there. And if he's not, and that is actually his match pace, I'd want to see now if we can stress his bowling action a bit by running in a bit faster, because he's going to need that momentum going into the delivery stride.
That is a good point, isn't it? We didn't make that clear. But yeah, because your hip's not coming around so much, you do have to be a little bit quicker when you get to the crease, right? That's
yeah,
the reasoning behind it.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why you see people like... I mean, Ambrose is a great example to me. He really carried pace in, and he was a lovely runner. Even though he was a huge man, wasn't he? You know, 6 foot whatever. Yeah. Absolute giant. Yeah, he carried himself beautifully into the crease. And then somebody slightly different in Malcolm Marshall. You know, Malcolm Marshall had huge amounts of pace because he didn't have significant rotation at the crease. And you've only got to listen to Ponty and in particular Steph about the impact of that rotation. And if you don't have it, you have to substitute your lack of rotation for momentum. You have to be able to take that through the crease and into your bowling action. Otherwise, you're going to be causing yourselves all sorts of problems and unlikely to be able to get the ball down the other end at a huge rate of knots.
And also top marks for the indifferent sheep fielding at deep mid-on.
You can't beat. That's the best animal that we've seen in any bowling clip so far.
It is. It's top of the tree that easily.
Just on just on that potential that he might be leaning back a little bit, Gareth, and obviously a side on view would be great there. It might be worth considering just a little bit from a strength and conditioning point of view, a little bit of flexibility work. So if he is going to be that extension of that front knee, the less flexible you are, the more that is going to have an impact on your body weight going back. So if you're quite flexible in your left hamstring, left glute, you can still get your knee up without necessarily pushing your body and your body weight backwards. But if you aren't flexible, then it is going to have quite a negative impact on your momentum going forward. So it might be worth just considering that. And the other thing I was going to mention on the video is it does have a big look of that kind of drill type situation. For me, it actually looks quite similar to a good friend of mine, Oliver Hannon-Dolby, in the way he approaches the crease and the way he goes through his action. I don't know if you've seen much of him, Gareth, but he's quite similar in the way that he sets himself up. He's a little bit wide on release and he's quite front on there, but he's a little bit mechanical through it. And Oliver's one that's definitely been kind of constructed as an action over the years rather than is just sort of formed it himself. So it does still have that little mechanical look about it a little bit. And I'd probably say this is similar at this stage, but obviously he's working through a phase of development where he's changing things, and that may become a little bit more fluid as time goes on.
I thought one of the loveliest things about the bit of footage was the shape that he got on the ball as well. It just looked really natural to me, that bit. And I think if he just has the confidence to run in a bit more, it'd be lovely to see that ball doing the similar thing through the air, but at an accelerated pace. But it was a lovely seam position, and It was from that position that we had the camera at, Sam. I quite enjoyed looking down that line thinking, oh, that'd be decent to keep wicket to.
Absolutely.
Next question is from Akshat. And Akshat says, I've contacted you because I need help with my leg spin bowling. I was able to turn the ball a lot, but since I started practicing googlies, I've lost my leg spin. Any tips on how I can get my leggy back?
Stop practicing your googlies. Next.
Yeah. It's quite common, though, isn't it? You know, you get somebody who practices googlies so much that they forget how to bowl the leg break, and then they try and bowl the leg break, and everything comes out as a googly.
It absolutely does, doesn't it? And it's about getting your ratios of practice right and making sure that your focus isn't completely on one thing. And if you're going to build a variation, or if you're going to adapt the way you want to release the ball, and that this could be as a seam bowler or as a spin bowler, you've got to get your allocation of each delivery right throughout your periods of practice. So I'm not sure what the official ratio from the coach education is at the moment. I think it's probably 3 orthodox deliveries to 1 variation, or it used to be. I mean, when I was on my level 3 course, Gareth might be able to say if there is one now, whether there isn't one, but that's certainly what it was when I was on. Is that still something that people pursue and people talk about when on those courses there, Gareth?
It's not something that I've heard, to be honest. Again, you know, I'm going to bore myself and everybody else that listens to this every week, but it's very much an individual thing around repetition, because some people learn predominantly through repetition and other people learn through keeping things fresh and mixing stuff up. So, I mean, it sounds to me, it's a classic, isn't it, Sam? We see it a lot. And as you say, it's not just spinners that this comes down to, because I remember 2008, England playing against South Africa. Jimmy Anderson was bowling really well, but they had Graham Smith and Ashwell Prince playing in that series. Graham Smith in particular played very well in that series. And Jimmy predominantly went across, as we see him do very, very well now. Went across Graham Smith, went across Biff a lot, and actually lost his ability to bring the ball back in. And I think we had three test matches? It may have been four. Yeah, probably four, actually. And it was. Yeah, they won 2-1. So it's 4 and we had a draw. And Jimmy was going across him all of the time and bowling beautifully and kept beating him on the outside, even though Graham Smith was scoring runs. And then myself and the bowling coach at the time said, can we see if we can get one ball coming back? And then he tried to do it and he couldn't get that ball. He lost his away swinger effectively because he bowled so much at Graham Smith and Prince in that series. And normally when Jack Callis batted, then we'd bring on Andrew Flintoff, who used to bowl very well at Jack. So Jimmy didn't bowl at right-handers very much and lost that ability to go back into the left-hander or away from the righty. And it was only in the last test match when the series was dead that Jimmy found, just before in preparation, found that away swinger or the ball that would come back into Graham Smith again. And then he did Graham Smith absolutely brilliantly. He went across him for 4 or 5 balls, and then drew that ball back into him and got him out LBW in the Oval Test match. But it goes to show that some people, and Jimmy is somebody that if he gets into repetitions too much, then he can get one tracked. He went so much across this left-hander, going across the left-hander, and he completely lost the ability to get it back. And we had to work very hard with him to build his confidence up and to work on his competencies to get that ball to come back. But that was the start of him being able to mix it up really, really nicely. But it happens to everybody. So to me, it's working with the individual. Some people would need a bit more repetition to get it right. Other people, if they do too much, like it sounds like this lad has, will then lose the feeling and the kinesthetic awareness and lose all the pathways that allow him to get that big leg spinner going again. A great practice, and it's one that I did with a leg spinner at the weekend, was to simulate overs when he bowls. So if he bowled a certain ball, I'd say, right, he's just been clipped off your legs, he's gone for one, so you're now bowling at a left-hander, and I want you to go, what ball are you going to bowl? I'm going to bowl my leg spinner at left-hander, and he bowls it. Right, okay, it's a dot ball, what are you going? I'm going to go googly now. And get them to bowl balls as they would do within an over, because you can't ever get enough practice of doing that. So yes, do your repetitions if that's what really gets you going. But ultimately, you've got to be able to construct overs as a bowler. And as Shane Warne always used to say, his main job as a spinner was to make sure that he got the opportunity to bowl another over, because all spinners get their wickets between 9 and 12 overs apiece. And unless you get yourself another over, then you're not going to get the opportunity to pick up a wicket. And so I always get people to practice actual bowling in overs. Even if there's no batter there, you simulate it with a keeper or a coach standing behind the stumps and taking the balls and all of that. So that would be my advice, would be get back to doing that practice more than focusing solely on your googly, because it's about mixing it up. It's about having both options available to you and the batter knowing that you've got both options available to you.
And if it's really frustrating that you can't get that feel back, then there's always, you know, the simple stuff, flicking the ball from hand to hand, you know, getting the feel back, even just of the ball in the hand spinning out in the right way. Sometimes that can be enough. But flicking it underarm against a wall, those kind of simple things can make a big difference if you've lost that feel.
They're great drills, aren't they? And the best guys in the world do it, and they do it sometimes subconsciously. You know, they'll just be sitting there having a conversation in the changing room, and by the time they finish that conversation without even knowing about it, they've flicked 120 balls out. Well, that's great practice, isn't it? Whether they are consciously aware of what they're doing or not, it's really good. And I remember Warnie doing that very thing, and I've talked about it a heap, I'm sure, but when he lost his googly because his shoulder and his knee were stuffed, which didn't allow him to bowl it very often, he came up with that slider ball, and he used to flick that up against the wall in the old change room at Hampshire, and the change room would shake because it was made of wood, but the ball would come back, and he developed that slider, which ended up getting, I wouldn't want to put a figure on it, but if that ball didn't get him 150 test wickets, I don't know what ball did. Soapbox time here on the show, and we've got head coach David climbing up. Off you go, mate. 1 minute.
It's the end of our cricket season, and I was speaking to a player who had a disappointing season. He spent a very long time coming out with a lot of different reasons why things didn't go right for him, and it was fascinating to see his perception of the way things had gone compared to the perception of, say, the captain of the team that he played in, and all the couple of teams that he played in, and my perception as well. And it's interesting to get that view. And one of the things that we came up with was that the way that he presented his thoughts was often very abrasive to people. And he didn't like the idea of saying to somebody in a nicer way than the way that he was presenting the information. And I said, some of the ideas you have are very good, but sometimes you've got to think about the way that you present them. So it's not just about what you're thinking, but it's also about the way that you say it, which is very important if you want to progress at any level of cricket. And that is the end of the show for another week. We've discussed cricket, we've answered your questions, but there's one more thing we need to do, and that is decide on the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we have Brendan's question about a bowler with high knees, and we have Ashak's question about bowling too many googlies. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Brendan's one this week. I thought the footage, as Sam said, was fantastic. I love the work that he's done, and hopefully we've given him a couple of little things to, A, not worry too much about the knees, just to check that sequencing thing with some side-on footage, just to make sure that the high knee isn't affecting the sequencing of the bowl in the upper body. But yeah, really good question, Brendan. Keep them coming in. I know you're a regular listener to the show, and this week you've won a course.
Yeah, congratulations, Brendan, especially on the sheep appearance. That's my favourite part.
I can't believe I forgot that, but well done for remembering. Yeah, absolutely. So there's the challenge, isn't there? You know, let's see what different types of animals from different parts of the world we can get into. some videos that are sent in.
That'd be excellent. Speaking of sending in videos and sending in questions, Gareth, if someone wanted to send in their question and get it answered and win that prize, How could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us a sheep in a video at coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, you can. You can always do that. You can also send your sheep videos and cricket videos via social media. We're on Facebook. If you go to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and you can find us on Twitter at pitchvisionacad. You can also listen to this show every week. If you want to do that, just go to your favourite podcast app on your phone or your tablet or your computer and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. You click on the subscribe button and we'll do the rest. We'll send you the podcast every week, every Friday. And if you want to get the show notes and you want to stream the show from the website, you can do all that kind of thing by heading over to the brand new look Pitch Vision Academy website, pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link on the side and you'll get all the show notes for this current show and all previous shows and a way to stream it online as well. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Labours.
Cheers, fellas.